Imagine you're standing in this really high-end gallery in Dubai.
Okay, setting the scene. I like it.
Yeah. And you're staring at this massive, seemingly serene piece of digital art. I mean, it's
Yeah.
beautifully framed, clearly meant to be this huge masterpiece.
Right.
But then you glance down at the plaque next to it. And instead of the usual, lofty sort of self-congratulatory artist statement,
Oh, the ones that are like a paragraph of pure poetry.
exactly. Instead of that, you read this literal list of technical flaws.
Wow.
Yeah. The artist's own notes are just pinned right there, explicitly pointing out everything he did wrong.
That is so rare.
It's wild. He admits the planes are muddy, the contrast is too low, the visual hierarchy is compromised. It totally shatters the illusion.
Yeah, you really have to wonder why an artist would publicly sabotage their own pursuit of perfection like that.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this because that is exactly the tension we are diving into today.
It forces us to ask some really uncomfortable questions about the creative process, honestly.
It really does. So for this deep dive, we are focusing on a digital artwork titled Femenis Compartidas, which translates to shared labors by the artist Jero Duque.
Right.
And we are pulling from a fascinating stack of sources for this. We've got analytical critiques from all over the map, a deep dive into the geographical history of how the piece was actually made, and of course, those shockingly honest technical notes from Jero himself.
And, the story of this piece doesn't actually begin on a digital canvas, or even in a quiet room, for that matter.
No, it's very physical, right?
Extremely. The origin point is a documentary-style photograph taken by Daniel Dookie, right on the coastline of Newport Beach.
Ah, Newport Beach.
Yeah, and the environment there is crucial to understand. It's chaotic. You have the aggressive crashing of the waves, the sharp, just overwhelming noise of seagulls fighting for scraps.
It's not a quiet place.
Not at all.
Yep.
And you have the physical reality of a fisherman working right there on the wet sand. It is an environment defined by sweat, salt, and this immediate organic crudeness.
But, and I think this is where the narrative transition is so interesting, Jero Duque doesn't set up an easel on the sand.
Right, he doesn't stay there.
No, he
Yeah.
doesn't even try to capture that chaotic energy while standing in the middle of it. He takes that raw reference photograph and just completely removes himself from the coastline.
He travels inland, right?
Yeah, to his studio in Whittier, California. And this is in December 2023, which is months after the original photo was taken.
That gap in time is so important.
It really is. So he sits down in this completely different, isolated environment to reinterpret the scene as digital art using the iPad software, Procreate.
Which is such a shift in medium.
Oh, entirely. Reading through the geographical timeline in our sources, it honestly feels remarkably similar to music production.
Oh, how so?
Well, it's like taking a live recording of a really chaotic, sweaty, underground punk rock concert.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
Right, and then bringing those raw audio tracks into a sterile, perfectly soundproof studio months later to mix them.
That is a great analogy.
You just have to wonder, does the art lose its soul in that transition, or does the isolation allow the artist to discover something, much deeper beneath all that noise?
What's fascinating here is that the Whittier studio really functioned as a sanctuary of processing.
A sanctuary. I like that phrasing.
Yeah, because if Duke had stayed on the beach, the sheer overwhelming sensory input would likely have pushed him toward a very literal documentary-style painting.
He would have just painted exactly what was in front of him.
Exactly. He would have felt compelled to paint the sweat and the immediate physical strain. But removing himself, it wasn't a retreat. It was a mechanism to filter the experience.
So the sterile space allowed him to abandon the literal reality of the photograph.
Precisely. He wasn't just copying a camera's output anymore. He was using the quiet of the studio to sort of meditate on the broader ethics of work and the balance of nature.
And you can see how that sterile environment directly dictated his choice of tools, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Being in a quiet room holding an iPad, he isn't grabbing like a coarse digital brush to mimic thick, heavy oil paint.
Right. He completely steps away from the aggressive textures of traditional painting.
He leans into the specific capabilities of Procreate instead. He opts for these incredibly soft software filters, a very specific pastel color palette, and this lightness that almost mimics a gentle watercolor.
The whole aesthetic is just incredibly quiet.
It really is.
And that aesthetic elevates the climate of the work. You know,
yeah.
It shifts the viewer's focus away from the physical exertion of the fishermen and pushes them into this space of conceptual serenity.
See, but that soft pastel aesthetic is exactly where the debate in our sources catches fire.
Oh, for sure. The pushback is real.
Right, because let's look at the title again. Faenas compartidas, shared labors.
That's a heavy word.
It is. The word labor carries so much expectation. It implies muscle, survival, grit, physical exhaustion.
Yeah, you literally have a fisherman actively working, dragging nets or dealing with his catch.
Exactly. Surrounded by seagulls, aggressively hunting to survive, it is a strenuous high-stakes scene.
So to take that into a digital studio.
And apply soft, diffuse digital filters, washing everything in serene pastel blues. It feels like a contradiction.
It does feel a bit disconnected from the reality of this scene.
I mean, it's almost like putting a beauty filter on a construction site. It over-romanticizes the very real, organic crudeness of the original moment.
That semantic clash between the word labor and the serene visual execution is a totally valid critique.
Thank you. I mean, it just seems so obvious.
But the analytical essays defending the piece counter that expectation of grit with this deep ecological theme.
Okay, the ecological argument. Walk me through that.
So the viewer expects the visual tension of human struggle, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the artist is actually painting camouflage within a mature ecosystem.
Camouflage. Applied to a fisherman working on a busy beach. That seems unexpected.
It does, but think about it. In nature, when an organism truly integrates into an ecosystem, it doesn't aggressively stand out.
It adapts to its surroundings to reduce contrast.
Exactly. So by using that incredibly soft, low-contrast pastel palette, Duke is intentionally stripping the human figure of its traditional visual dominance.
Oh, wow. So he's refusing to light the fisherman like a superhero.
Right. He's just another animal scavenging for survival on the shoreline.
He becomes just another link in the food chain.
Exactly. Participating equally in this larger trophic network. I mean, if Duke had painted the fisherman with harsh, dark shadows and bright, striking highlights,
the human would totally visually dominate the canvas.
Yeah, he'd look like a conqueror standing over nature. But compressing the tonal values forces the fisherman to blend into the soft blues and grays of the water and sky.
So the palette itself is delivering the message. The human is part of the environment, not the master of it.
Exactly that.
Okay, well, the camouflage theory makes complete sense on paper.
I hear a butt coming.
But when you move away from the conceptual philosophy and actually stand in front of this canvas in a Dubai gallery, that soft, blended palette creates a massive physical problem for the human eye.
The visual mechanics issue.
Right. This brings us to what the critiques describe as the trap of digital tools, specifically in programs like Procreate.
Because it really comes down to the mechanics of how digital art is produced versus how it's actually consumed.
Yes, let's break down that mechanism for a second. When a painter uses a physical bristle brush on canvas, the sheer physical size of the tool forces definitive choices.
You mix a dark color, you drag it across a light canvas, and you get a distinct edge.
Exactly. There is a built-in macro contrast, but in Procreate, you have infinite zoom and infinite layers.
It's a completely different way of seeing the work.
You can pinch the screen, zoom in 500% on a single inch of the canvas, and use a slider to adjust the opacity of a shadow by, like, 2%.
And on a backlit monitor, inches from your face, those micro transitions look flawless.
Flawless. You can spend hours perfecting the gradient of a single seagull's wing. But it's a trap.
It's like trying to paint a giant mural while looking through a microscope.
That is the perfect way to describe it. Because when you zoom out, or when the piece is finally printed and hung on a gallery wall, all of those tiny, delicate opacity shifts just vanish.
They get completely lost.
Yeah. Because of that extreme pixel-level blending, the fisherman's arm, the overcast sky behind him, and the wooden architectural structures all just melt into a single, muddy, bluish gray.
The visual mechanics fail because they ignore human physiology.
Biology wins every time.
Always. Our eyes evolved over millions of years to seek out light and shadow. We scan environments looking for high contrast to establish anchors.
To tell our brains what is in the foreground and what is in the background.
Exactly. So when an artist compresses the tonal values so tightly that everything shares the exact same shade of pastel blue, the brain just cannot parse the depth.
The eye has nowhere to rest.
And the planes of the composition flatten out entirely.
It creates a wall of visual confusion. I mean, you want to appreciate the ecosystem, but your brain is just trying to figure out where the sky ends and the fisherman begins.
Right. But before we dismiss the visual mechanics entirely, we really need to examine the architectural element Duke placed in the composition.
Oh, the central structure.
Yeah, right in the middle of this soft, low-contrast, flattened ecosystem, there is this central, geometric, wooden volume.
It acts as a structural anchor.
It does. Oh. But its real purpose is to serve as a canvas for the artwork's third protagonist, which introduces this really brilliant meta-narrative.
Ah, the shadow.
The projected shadow of the photographer, Daniel Duke.
That part is so cool.
It is. The composition sets up a didactic triangle of trades.
Yeah.
You have the physical labor of the fisherman.
The survival labor of nature through the seagulls.
And then, projected onto the architecture, the labor of the artist documenting the scene. It elevates the painting from just a simple beach scene to a meta-narrative about art observing labor.
The triangle of trades is such a brilliant conceptual layer. But here's where it gets really interesting. We run headfirst into that wall of technical execution again.
Oh, no. Back to the contrast issues.
Afraid so. Because the tonal contrast of the painting is so incredibly compressed and everything is washed in that same digital blue, the conceptually profound shadow of the photographer doesn't actually look like a human silhouette.
What does it look like then?
Honestly, it just looks like a moisture stain on the wood.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because it lacks tridimensionality. It fails to push forward from the background.
Exactly. I mean, unless you are standing in the gallery holding the exhibition sheet, reading the artist's statement that literally directs you to look closely at that specific smudge on the wood.
You would never know it's a person.
Never. And this is the crux of the critical debate right here. The intellectual ambition of the piece requires the viewer to do the translation that the painting should have done mechanically.
That's a huge burden to put on the audience.
It is. If a viewer has to read a manual to understand the visual anchor of a painting, it's really hard to argue the visual art is succeeding on its own merits.
That is a fair point. But to reconcile the tension between this brilliant shadow concept and the muddy visual execution, the defense of the artwork introduces the element of time.
Time. How does time fix the contrast?
Well, the reason the image is so softened and the shadow so vague isn't just a byproduct of ecological camouflage or some digital zoom trap. It is a temporal choice.
Oh, right. Going back to the timeline.
Exactly. Remember, the photograph was taken in the chaotic present, but the digital art was rendered months later, in December 2023.
So the Whittier studio wasn't just geographically distant, it was chronologically distant.
Yes. The stylistic choices, the soft edges, the low contrast, the hazy shadow, they actually mimic the function of human memory.
Oh, that is fascinating.
Right. When we recall an event from months ago, it rarely retains surgical sharpness.
The hard edges of reality blur.
Exactly. The extreme highs and lows of light and dark fade into a softer, flattened middle ground.
I mean, trying to recall a specific detail from a past event is often like looking through frosted glass.
So the defense argues that the low contrast is not a technical failure of Procreate. It is a deliberate, poetic representation of a suspended recollection.
Okay, that changes things.
Memories of shared labor and ecological balance are inherently soft, and the painting reflects that neurological reality.
You know, framing the low contrast as the literal filter of memory provides such a fascinating way to interpret the piece.
Give it a lot of grace.
It does. But, you know, if you are an art student listening to this, or just someone who creates things and struggles with that gap between intention and execution.
Which is every artist ever.
Right. The most valuable part of our source material isn't actually the debate over memory versus mechanics. It is Jarrow Duke's own technical notes.
They are a masterclass in professional vulnerability.
They really are. I mean, artists typically release statements to defend their choices, you know, to mythologize their process or to elevate their own genius.
Yeah, to make it sound like every single mistake was actually a stroke of brilliance.
Exactly. But Jarrow Duke took the complete opposite approach. He publicly dissected his own canvas.
He explicitly outlines the technical flaws in his own documentation.
He does. He acknowledges that he could have deepened the differentiation of planes.
Right.
He states openly that he could have pushed the tonal contrast much harder to strengthen the visual hierarchy.
Meaning he knew exactly how to make the fisherman pop out from the background.
Yes. And he knew how to make the photographer's shadow instantly recognizable to the eye. He looked at the muddy, bluish-gray result, recognized that the traditional rules of composition were failing.
and made the active conscious choice to leave it that way anyway.
Which is just staggering.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, his notes reveal a critical evaluation of visual hierarchy in the digital age.
Oh, so?
Well, software like Procreate gives artists the power to blend indefinitely, to soften every single edge until it just disappears.
The digital trap we talked about earlier.
Exactly. But Duke's self-critique demonstrates that the orthodox rules of painting needing contrast, needing distinct foregrounds and backgrounds, they are inescapable.
They govern a digital iPad canvas just as strictly as they govern a traditional oil painting.
They do. But his ultimate decision highlights a historical truth about art evaluation.
That conceptual weight can often carry technical scars.
Precisely. Historically important works of art frequently transcend their mechanical flaws.
Like an anatomically incorrect hand in a Renaissance painting.
Or a skewed perspective in an early modernist piece. It doesn't destroy the artwork if the conceptual foundation is heavy enough.
Right.
Duke weighed the mechanical necessity of visual hierarchy against the conceptual themes of memory, ecological camouflage, and shared labor.
And he decided that implementing harsh, perfect contrast would destroy the quiet meditation he found in that Whittier studio.
Exactly. He accepted the technical scars because they served the concept.
So what does this all mean? We have tracked quite an arc today for you guys.
We really have.
We started on the noisy, salty coastline of Newport Beach with a raw documentary photograph of a fisherman.
And we followed that image inland to a quiet, sterile studio in Whittier,
where the chaotic reality was abstracted and processed through the specific softening lens of digital tools. And the result is Fanus Compartidus.
A piece of art that deliberately sacrifices perfect visual tension and biological contrast.
Yeah. It risks confusing the viewer's eye in favor of representing profound ecological harmony and the blurred, hazy edges of human memory.
Which is a bold trade-off.
We examined how the infinite zoom of digital software can trap an artist in micro details, but we also saw an artist brave enough to publicly dissect his own technical shortcomings for the sake of a stronger, overarching message.
And, you know, the entire debate circles around a hypothetical scenario that sits at the very core of artistic creation.
Oh, lay it on me.
Imagine if Jarrod Duke went back into his studio today, opened that Procreate file, and mathematically perfected every single technical flaw he identified. Mm-hmm. Imagine he deepens the shadows, brightens the highlights, separates the planes perfectly, and makes the photographer's shadow crisp and immediately readable.
It would be technically flawless.
But if he created that visually striking version, would he erase the vulnerability, the humanity, and the atmospheric haze of memory that makes the piece resonate in the first place?
Wow.
The question remains for all of you listening. At what point does perfecting the technique kill the soul of the concept?
That tension between flawless execution and conceptual soul is something every creator has to navigate. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We highly encourage you to seek out the image of Fanus Compartidus online.
Definitely look it up.
Look at the low contrast. Try to find the wooden architecture and see if that shadow feels like a profound meta-narrative or just a digital mistake to you. Decide for yourself how you would resolve the clash between technique and concept. Until next time.